Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1943 with a release date of November 7th to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. China's moon flyby and return to Earth mission is a success, but where is the 4M ham radio payload? Also the latest on sunspot activity. Australian hams to keep access to the 3.5 gigahertz band. Enhanced LORAN comes to United Kingdom shipping ports. ARIS U.S. partners are now accepting proposals for school contacts in 2015. And the BBC announces its genome project for cataloging its past. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1943, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first and only independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
The epic voyage of the 4M ham radio lunar flyby mission has come to an end as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
The Lux Space Manfred Memorial Moon Mission, nicknamed 4M, that circled the moon on October 28th, is now in Earth orbit. At least it was as of November 3rd, as reported in a post to the Lux Space Mission blog. For the information available as we go to air, the 4M amateur radio payload was attached to the upper stage of a Chinese Long March 3C rocket. Its primary payload was the Chang'e 5 T1, which is a prototype of a Mars lander capsule with the ability to safely return to Earth. Both completed the loop around the moon early on October 28th and headed back toward our home planet. As widely reported, the Chang'e 5 T1 made it safely through the Earth's atmosphere without any real heat damage. It touched down at 2242 UTC on October 31st in Inner Mongolia. However, before that, it appears that the 4M payload was separated from the Long March and injected into an elliptical Earth orbit, averaging about 24,800 miles with an inclination of 50 degrees. It reached perigee early Sunday morning, November 2nd, with good JT65 digital signals heard over Europe on 145.98 megahertz. At that time, Lux Space estimated that the 4M payload had enough power left for another 2 to 3 days of operation. Also noted was that the dosimeter experiment called DrawLux had stopped functioning. Exactly what's next for the 4M payload can only be speculated. Being self-contained with no solar charging ability, it will more than likely go QRT if it has not taken place by now. If you happen to locate its signal, Lux Space would appreciate getting activity reports. They go via the mission client program that can be downloaded at tinyurl.com/4m-online-report. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
While there is likely a lot more to this story, there is no doubt that the 4M amateur radio lunar flyby will go into the history books as a first for ham radio in space. NASA has released a video showing 8 days of solar flares produced by the largest sunspot in the past 24 years. Known as AR-2192, the video is a time-lapse that shows its X-class flares in both visible and ultraviolet light using images taken by the Solar Dynamics Observatory Atmospheric Imaging Assembly Instrument. As previously reported here on Amateur Radio Newsline, the massive sunspot, which has now rotated away from Earth, produced some of the most powerful X-class flares between October 19th and the 27th, plus many more medium-class flares during that same period. A link to this video can be found in the print edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. Meantime, a new sunspot region designated AR-2205 has already produced 4 medium M-class flares and is rotating in Earth's direction. AR-2205 unleashed the flares, including one rated M6. That flare was recorded by NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory on November 3rd at 2240 UTC. Sunspot AR-2205 has also produced several coronal mass ejections, though these did not head toward our planet. Observers at the Space Weather Prediction Center are monitoring it carefully. For the latest updates, take your web browser to spaceweather.com. Radio amateurs down under engaged in microwave work can breathe a sigh of relief. This as the Australian Communications and Media Authority, or ACMA, decides to retain the existing mix of spectrum licensing arrangements in the 3.5 gigahertz band. Earlier this year, the Australian Minister for Communications, Malcolm Turnbull, issued a draft direction to the telecommunications regulator to enable licensing of 3.5 gigahertz to the National Broadband Network, or NBN, in major mainland cities. The draft direction document specified that the ACMA look at a 25 megahertz block at 3400 to 3425 megahertz and a 50 megahertz block at 3492.5 to 3542.5 megahertz. The 3.5 gigahertz spectrum band was identified for possible reallocation, so the NBN had a spectrum gap to fill in the outskirts of metropolitan areas affecting 80,000 homes and businesses. But in issuing its decision, the telecommunications regulator stated that after taking into account the commentary submissions received and developments that have occurred since then, the ACMA has decided to maintain existing licensing arrangements in the band. That means the retention of amateur radio as a secondary user of the band. The issue attracted 24 submissions. The FM Radio Data System website reports that some countries appear to be planning to extend their FM broadcast band downward. According to a web post, Brazilian telecommunications regulator Anatel was contacted, and it confirmed the planned extension of the FM band down to 76 megahertz. It was noted that there will be a problem with the radio data system operating in the range 76 to 87.5 megahertz. However, with implementation of RDS 2.0, this could likely be solved. The entire story is online at tinyurl.com/Brazil-band-extension. The same website also notes that China plans to extend broadcast FM radio down to 64 megahertz. In DX Upfront, late word that the 9M2SE Pangor Island operation is likely taking place as some of you hear this newscast. The latest word is that this island's on-the-air operation was slated to begin at 0100 hours UTC on November 8th and end precisely 24 hours later on November 9th. The group also announced that Pangor will be its last de-expedition and islands on-the-air activation. After it concludes, the organization will be dissolved. QSL via the 9M2SE information on QRZ.com. ON4WW reports that he has been granted permission by the Norwegian Polar Institute to land and live on Bouvet Island during mid-January until mid-April of 2016. The sole purpose of this operation will be to provide contacts with Bouvet, which is currently ranked number 3 on the various DXCC most wanted lists. During this time on Bouvet, ON4WW hopes to make at least 100,000 QSOs using CW, SSB, and RIDI on all of the high-frequency bands. There is, however, one caveat. Whether or not this de-expedition will take place depends on raising the necessary funding. More is on the web at www.on4ww.be/bouvet2016.html. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WB5RAP repeater serving Purcell, Oklahoma. Technology developed during World War II is to be used as a backup for GPS. This after the United Kingdom's General Lighthouse Authorities announces that it has installed a system called Enhanced, or E-Loran, in 7 ports across Britain. Amateur Radio Newsline's Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, reports.
The United Kingdom's General Lighthouse Authority says that many critical instruments on ships use global navigation satellite systems, or GPS. It says that if GPS were to fail, the consequences could be disastrous. But, says the General Lighthouse Authorities, the new system, which uses proven technology dating back to the 1940s, is ground rather than satellite-based and is designed to be used in the event of a GPS failure. Testing for E-Loran has taken place in Felixstowe, the busiest container port in the UK. Each year, some 3 million cargo containers are brought into this port on some of the biggest ships in the world. LORAN is an acronym for long-range navigation. The system was developed in the United States during World War II and was similar to the UK's GEE system, but operated at lower frequencies in order to provide improved range up to 1,500 miles. As an aside, it's a pity this story didn't get released just before June 6th this year, the 70th anniversary of the D-Day landings on the northern France coast. The original system was used to assist the mine-clearing operations in the English Channel so that the invading fleet could reach the shore with the minimum of casualties. A ghost slave station was also put into operation at the same time to make the Germans think that the real invasion was to be at the Pas de Calais and the Straits of Dover, and that the Normandy landings were purely a diversionary tactic. How wrong they were. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in New Orleans. Skeeter?
An in-depth look at the return of this 20th century navigation system here in the 21st century can be found at tinyurl.com/e-loran-return. A full explanation of the development, implementation, and demise of the original system is at wikipedia.org/wiki/loran. When the sailing ship Hail Revenge ran into trouble in the Pacific, it turned to ham radio, as we hear in this report.
Larry LaCrone, an Otero County amateur radio operator, Larry called to report that he was monitoring one of the ham's emergency operations projects known as the Maritime Net, which is continuously monitored by a series of volunteer radio operators across the country. While monitoring that net Sunday night, he served as backup when another amateur radio operator on board a sailing vessel adrift in the Pacific was taking on water in 20-foot seas nearly 800 miles west of the California-Oregon border. That vessel wanted to declare an emergency, but was having trouble contacting the Coast Guard. The ham that took the call notified the Coast Guard and served as a relay between them and the distressed vessel. The Coast Guard sent out an HT-130 aircraft from Point Reyes Coast Guard Station in California. The ham maritime net operator instructed the sailboat to activate their emergency locator beacon, a container cargo ship. The 965-foot Hyundai Grace was in the region and responded to that emergency beacon signal and rescued all on board that sailboat, which was on its way from Honolulu to Everett, Washington, when it was damaged by high winds and seas.
Tim Bass, KALH Spectrum News, from Alamogordo, New Mexico, reporting.
The ham radio gear on board the 32-foot vessel was an ICOM IC-718 transceiver. Nathan Stickle, NH7FS, is reported to have been the ham radio operator on the voyage. About 23 hams from the state of Oklahoma attended a special auxiliary communications class held the weekend of November 1st and 2nd in the city of Altus. According to Lloyd Colston, KC5FM, who is Altus Emergency Management Director, the attendees represented faith-based groups, community emergency response teams, the American Radio Relay League, the military auxiliary radio system, and local government. Colston says that the class covered numerous topics, including how to use volunteers and how amateur radio operators are technical specialists, to mention only two. Instructors were amateur radio operators, with one being a member of the military auxiliary radio system, as well as a division director for the American Radio Relay League. KC5FM added that the class also received homeland security training. Trade groups have told the FCC that its proposed new guidelines for the text that crawls at the top of the screen during a flood, snowstorm, or other emergency are not necessary and could be expensive. But disability advocacy groups are not buying that position. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, takes a look at the issue.
The FCC is said to be working on new guidelines for the text that runs during an emergency alert. This is part of its broader overhaul of the emergency system that will create a new location code for transmitting emergency messages nationwide. But, says the National Cable and Telecommunications Association, the current cable systems generally display visual crawls that are readable by viewers that do not pass too quickly and continue throughout the duration of the emergency alert service activation. The NCTA added that standardizing the appearance of emergency alert service messages for speed and size is unnecessary to address accessibility concerns and would lead to significant cost with little benefit. On the other side of the argument, a coalition of disability advocacy organizations has strongly recommended a standardized system of emergency messages, one that included slower text crawl speed and larger size characters. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB reporting.
At airtime, it is not known if or when the FCC will take action on this item. The November issue of CQ DATVE magazine is now available for free download. The new issue contains the latest amateur television news from around the world, an editorial by Ian Abel, G3ZHI, that asks why ATV repeaters do not have internet inputs. A simple microwave detector for 10 gigahertz by John Hudson, G3RFL, and much more. Those interested can find this issue and those of previous months at tinyurl.com/DATV-November-2014. Some names in the news. First up is former ARRL Great Lakes Division Director Gary Johnston, KI4LA, who has been named as the recipient of the Kentucky Historical Society's 2014 Award of Distinction. KI4LA is president of the Board of Trustees of the Beringer Crawford Museum in Covington, Kentucky. According to the Cincinnati Inquirer newspaper, since joining the Board of Trustees in 2003, Johnston has had a significant impact on the museum and the communities it serves. The article also notes that during thousands of volunteer hours, he redesigned and upgraded the museum's computer systems, chaired the committee that revamped its organizational structure, and helped secure more than $2.3 million in funding to complete the museum's major expansion, which opened in 2007. The Radio Society of Great Britain has announced the appointment of Philip Willis, M0PHI, as the new chairman of its Training and Education Committee. Willis succeeds Steve Hartley, G0FUW, in this post. Clint Bradford, K6LCS, has updated his frequency programming charts for the so-called EasySats to include the upcoming orbiting AMSAT North America Fox 1A satellite. The chart, as well as a copy of Joanne Mayenpaw, K9JKM's article titled Getting Ready for Fox 1A, are both available for downloading at work-sat.com/sat_skeds.html. An EasySat is basically defined as an easy-to-access and use ham radio satellite, requiring a minimum of equipment for the task. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Region 1 of the International Amateur Radio Union plans to spend roughly $28,000 on young hams in 2015, 2016, and 2017. According to the minutes of the recent 23rd IARU Region 1 General Conference, for that time frame, about $26,000 will be spent directly on youth-oriented projects, with another $2,000 on a new youth working group that will be chaired by Lisa Leenders, PA2LS. This youth working group will organize and coordinate the Region 1 Youngsters on the Air program and other Region 1 youth-oriented activities. The imminent closure of the Irish public broadcaster RTE's long-wave service has been postponed until January 19, 2015. Its original shutdown date was this past October 27th, but the managing director of RTE Radio, Jim Jennings, announced plans to travel to the United Kingdom to meet with community groups affected by the loss of service. Jennings hopes that other solutions might be found acceptable to them. Longwave is the only RTE radio service that reaches the United Kingdom using RF transmission, though the global Irish audience can also listen online. The outcry over the closure was greater than expected, but Jennings says the Longwave service is still set to be shuttered early next year. There is a new shortwave radio broadcaster coming your way from here in the United States. Global 24 Radio is an English language, around-the-clock, fixed-frequency, commercial shortwave radio broadcaster, transmitting via the facilities of WRMI in Okeechobee, Florida. It began broadcasting on Friday, October 31st at 0000 hours UTC on 9.395 MHz. More information on the station and a daily programming listing is at global24radio.com. Jim Salmon, 2E0RMI, has announced that the program Chelmsford Calling will also be relayed on shortwave by Florida-based broadcaster WRMI. Chelmsford Calling is described as a light entertainment program produced by Salmon from the Chelmsford Calling Network. This organization was established with the aim of promoting past, present, and future radio technology to its audience. The first shortwave relay will take place on Friday, November 14th at 2300 UTC. More about the show is at chelmsfordcalling.com. New Zealand telecommunications regulator Radio Spectrum Management has identified serious cases of interference to radio communications at log hauler sites from the operation of vehicle-mounted LED lighting. The interference is so severe that in hours of darkness where the lights are on, radio systems have become inoperable. Due to serious safety concerns, Radio Spectrum Management was requested to investigate the situation. it conducted an audit of emergency lighting suppliers, where it was generally found that these companies were not aware of the need to ensure their equipment met that nation's necessary EMC radiation standards. The Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, or ARIS program, is seeking formal and informal education institutions and organizations, individually or working together, to host an amateur radio contact with a crew member on board the ISS. ARIS anticipates that the contact would be held between May 1st and December 31st of 2015. But as always, crew scheduling and the space station's orbits will determine the exact contact dates. Also, to maximize these radio contact opportunities, ARIS is looking for organizations that will draw large numbers of participants and integrate the contact into a well-developed education plan. ARIS contacts can be performed in one of two ways. One is a radio link between an amateur radio station set up in a school talking directly to the amateur station on board the ISS. The other involves the use of a teleconference bridge, where a specific amateur radio ground station establishes the radio link with the ISS. Voice communications between students and the astronauts are then patched over regular telephone lines. The ARIS.org website gives details. On the homepage, right below the title, is a menu line of choices. Click on the Submit a Contact Proposal page. The deadline to submit a proposal is December 15th. The popular DX Summit website, operated by Radio Arcala station OH8X, is getting a new look and a new name. As of December 1st, the site will become My DX Summit and will soon have a fresh new face and a more modern user interface. Among the changes will be real-time posting of DX spotting that is user-selectable of precisely the kind of spots that interest them. Also, entering a spotting will be made easier through a simple dialog box. Site developers also note that a lot of effort is being put into having it work with a majority of mobile devices and browsers. It's expected that the ongoing testing procedure could result in some changes to the site before its actual rollout. GB3NGI, which is the first of the United Kingdom's new 70-centimeter propagation beacons, is now operational on 432.482 MHz. The system is located on a hilltop in Northern Ireland and is licensed for 250 watts peak envelope power output on a 125 degree bearing. GB3NGI transmits both CW and the JT65B digital mode. Reception reports and a coverage map are at www.beaconspot.eu. On the air, keep an ear open for members of the FG4KI Radio Club who are currently operating special event station T04R from Guadalupe. This in celebration of the 10th Sailing Transatlantic Race, which takes place between St. Malo, France, and Point a Pitre, Guadalupe. Stations are operational on 160 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, RTTY, and a number of digital modes. The station will shut down on November 16th, QSL via F4AVX. In DX, DL6KVA will be active as 4K0CW from Azerbaijan between November 26th and December 2nd. Operations will be CW only on all HF bands using 100 watts into a long wire. He also plans to participate in the CQ Worldwide DXCW contest on November 29th and 30th. QSL via DL6KVA via the Bureau or electronically using Logbook of the World. DL7DF will be on holiday in Senegal through November 13th, operating /6W. Operations are 160 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, RIDI, PSK31, and SSTV. QSL via DL7DF, direct or by the DARC Bureau. JA0JHQ will be active stroke FK from New Caledonia between November 21st through the 24th. Operations will be limited to the high-frequency bands using CW and SSB, QSL via his home call sign. Lastly, UT5UGR will be active as FM/KL7WA from Martinique between November 24th and December 1st. Activity will likely be on all HF bands except 30, 17, and 2 meters and the digital modes. Also look for him to be active during the CQ Worldwide DXCW contest, signing as TO7A, QSL both call signs via UT5 UGR. And finally this week, the British Broadcasting Corporation has announced the launch of what it calls the BBC Genome. This is a comprehensive project that's aimed at publishing a comprehensive history of every radio and TV program ever broadcast by the corporation. Launched in beta test format, the BBC Genome lets viewers and listeners search millions of programs, cast details, writers, and transmission dates of past BBC shows, as listed in 4,469 editions of Radio Times. The project scanned 350,622 pages and 4,423,653 program records from Radio Times between 1923 and 2009. The next phase of the project will look at capturing regional and national variations and changes to the planned broadcast schedules. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/BBC-genome. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, saying 7-3, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights reserved.